The next case to be heard is number 2014-1781, Emerson Network Power versus Lorain County Board of Revision. The appellant is Emerson Network Power. And we'll hear argument from Mr. Lewis.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Harlan Lewis, and I represent the appellant, Emerson Network Power. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal. This case concerns the valuation of real property for tax year 2012. The property was sold for $50,000 in an arm's length transaction. Therefore, the appellant argues that the property should be valued at the $50,000 sales price. But because the sale closed after the BTA hearing, but before the BTA decision, the BTA did not consider the $50,000 sale. The timing here is that before the BTA hearing, appellant entered into a binding sales contract to sell the property for $50,000. Also before the hearing, a 10% installment payment was made on that contract.
Was that pointed out at the hearing?
I believe that it was. Certainly the contract was entered into evidence at the hearing. It's plainly noted in the purchase price that 10% amount was paid at that time. At the hearing, we presented the testimony of the officer from the appellant who was responsible for the sale and who had signed the purchase contract. As the parties anticipated and pursuant to that purchase contract, after the BTA hearing, the sale closed, the balance of the $50,000 was paid, a new deed was executed and filed in the name of the new owner, a conveyance fee statement was filed. Immediately thereafter, we obtained certified copies of the deed and the conveyance fee statement and filed those with the Board of Tax Appeals. The Board of Tax Appeals after that then issued its decision, ignoring the $50,000 sale. In fact, twice the BTA wrongly concluded that the sale had never occurred. The BTA wrongly stated twice that there is no dispute that the parcels have not yet transferred. The BTA couldn't have been more wrong. The deed and the conveyance fee statement were filed with the county on August 11th, 2004. Certified copies of the documents were filed with the BTA on August 27, 2014. The BTA didn't issue its decision until the next month in September.
Was there anything in the nature of a motion to hold the hearing open or that sort of thing to keep sort of the door open to the additional evidence after the hearing?
No, there was not, Your Honor. There wasn't a motion to do that. Certified deeds and certified conveyance fee statements are the types of evidence that boards of revisions around the state routinely accept multiple times every day. The Board of Tax Appeals does as well. This is the type of evidence that is routinely submitted to show evidence of a sale. And here on top of that, we had the purchase contract that was submitted at the hearing and the testimony of the appropriate officer to explain about that sale and the circumstances surrounding the sale. In addition to that, Your Honor, there's an issue about appraisal evidence that was submitted. The appellant submitted appraisal evidence anticipating that the BTA may say that the sale is not yet closed, we won't accept that value. And knowing that the property was wildly overassessed as it was. The appraiser submitted a appraisal report, $450,000. The BTA in its initial decision accepted that appraisal report with little comment. After that, the Board of Education filed a motion for reconsideration asking that the BTA used the value of $588,000, which was on a draft appraisal report issued 2 days prior to the final report. It was unfortunate the way that it transpired at the hearing because there was some confusion that both reports were presented. There was the draft report for $588,000, the final report for $450,000. The Board of Tax Appeals in its final decision made the change from $450,000 to $588,000, saying that there had been a clerical error, but there wasn't a clerical error. The error was that the draft report found its way into the record. The school board picks parts of the testimony to show that $588,000 is the value. But when you look at the entirety of the hearing and the testimony, the appraiser says twice, I ran out, my staff printed a copy for me, they printed the wrong one. This later report is the official report. It's the one that had my final review. The earlier report was prepared by an associate. It was pending my final review. As we do with briefs, we do with appraisals, it goes through a process of revisions and editing. The final report was $450,000. Had the Board of Tax Appeals given the taxpayer the ability to respond, we would have made that clear. The Board of Tax Appeals, in making its adjustment, says that the appellant raises no dispute. In fact, we had, because when we had briefed this earlier, we brought this to the attention of the Board of Tax Appeals, and we certainly would have responded to the motion for reconsideration if the BTA had given us the full amount of our time. But in any event, Your Honor, the sale was consummated. The law is clear, and it's undisputed that the best evidence of value is an actual recent arm's-length sale, and that's what we have here. And we respectfully ask this court to reverse the Board of Tax Appeals and assign a value of $50,000. Reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Konzer.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Thomas A. Konzer. I'm counsel for the Board of Education of the Lorain City School District. Your Honor, there's really two issues in this appeal. The first issue deals with whether the property owner, Emerson Network, properly submitted evidence to the Board of Tax Appeals regarding this alleged arm's-length sale of the property. And the second one is whether the Board of Tax Appeals properly determined the value testified to by the property owner's appraiser. In regards to the first issue, dealing with the evidence of the sale of the alleged arm's-length nature. And it is not conceded that this is an arm's-length sale. Let's look at what was presented to the BTA at the time of the hearing. At the time of the hearing, the property owner's attorney talked about this sales agreement. And he said, and this wasn't evidence, but it was an opening statement. He said that the value is $50,000. That is based on a purchase and sales agreement where the property owner has agreed to sell the property under agreement dated October 2nd, 2013. This is now June of 2014 for $50,000. The sale has not yet closed. Okay? What is that? 9 months. It still hasn't closed. The sales contract provides that it's supposed to close in 30 days. If the buyer doesn't satisfy its conditions in 30 days, the deal's off. So as of the time of the hearing, there's no evidence that the sale is still there. Okay? There is some evidence by the property owner's representative saying that they're still negotiating this. But then the attorney says the buyer has deposited the required $5,000 under the contract, but is working to obtain financing. The deal is still contingent. There's no final sale here. Okay? Mr. Clark, the property owner's attorney, admitted that the contract provided for due diligence by the buyer, and that contract did provide for due diligence that was to be completed within 30 days. So as far as the evidence of the contract submitted to the BTA was, that contract was over. If the property owner was still negotiating with the buyer, maybe there was a new deal, maybe there were modifications to the contract, but there was no deal presented to the BTA. Furthermore, the property owner's own witness, their own appraiser, testified that there's no way he could support a $50,000 value for this property. This is the witness that they presented, okay? He says, we did interview the owner about their pending sale, their attempts to try to sell. I understand that they're trying to sell it for $50,000. I just couldn't reconcile $50,000 with the market data that I had. I had nothing that low to show that it would be worth that. Now, admittedly, he's below the auditor's value, and I understand that. But he's also saying this $50,000 alleged price is not supportable at all. Okay? So that's at the time of the hearing. There was nothing, there was no sale. There was nothing there at the time to contest whether it was arm's length or not, because it hadn't occurred. So it's not conceded that there was an arm's length sale. Then what happens, after the hearing closes, the evidence is done, the case is closed, it's pending a waiting decision. You know, at some time we have to have an end to presenting evidence to the court. The property owner's attorney tries to submit documents to the BTA attached to their brief. These are a conveyance fee statement and an alleged deed. No, they're not certified, they're just copies of documents. We on the Board of Education object to that. The property owner then files a motion and submits certified copies of these same documents. He does not ask for the court to reopen the BTA to reopen the hearing so that evidence can be taken about this sale that occurred after the close of the hearing. He does not give us an opportunity to contest the arm's length nature of the sale. He just submits certified documents that were allegedly filed with the county recorder's office. The BTA properly ruled that these documents were not before them. They were not presented in a hearing. They were not presented in a stipulation. Okay? And the documents themselves are internally inconsistent, which would lead one to think that maybe there is something unusual about this sale. If you look at the conveyance fee statement, it's dated August 8th, 2014 in the upper right-hand corner. The deed is filed August 11th, 2014. In a normal transaction, these two documents are filed together on the same day. If you look at the deed itself, it's internally inconsistent and perhaps is not a valid deed. The deed is dated August 1st, 2014. It's signed by the property by the grantor on that date. The notarization of the deed is dated and signed July 30th, 2014. If that deed was notarized before it was signed by the property owner, as the deed shows on its face, it's an invalid deed. It's no evidence of a sale.
Well, Mr. Conzer, there would be, I guess, two approaches to this type of situation if we were at that BTA level. One would be to simply exclude this evidence, and that's what the BTA did. Or
exclude the
this additional evidence of the sale that say it's not before us. And the other approach, I guess, would be to consider it and then give everybody an opportunity to brief it or even hold a supplemental hearing or whatever. So here, they submitted the conveyance fee statement and the deed. Is that right? After the close of the hearing?
They submitted it attached as an exhibit to their brief. They didn't submit it in evidentiary form. There was no hearing. There was no sworn testimony about it. It was just the same as if I copied an article out of a newspaper and attached it or said, this is a document filed in a public office. There was no request for the BTA to take it as evidence, no request for a hearing. So the BTA didn't have anything before them to exclude because there was no request for them to make it a part of their record.
Okay. Well, I guess I would just, what I meant to say was there would be two approaches that the BTA could take. One is it could say what it apparently did say. This is not before us as evidence. We don't consider it. Or it could take the approach and say, well, since we have this in front of us now and we haven't issued a decision yet, we'll go ahead and consider it and then have the parties brief it and opening a hearing on it. And I guess your position is that what they did was they decided not to consider it and that was a perfectly proper thing to do under the circumstances.
That is correct, Your Honor. If they would have
had the other side filed a motion or something, then you could have opposed it or there could have been an additional hearing. But you're saying the approach they took was a proper approach to simply not consider this evidence.
That is correct, based on the evidence that was presented to them. If they were inclined to reopen the hearing to consider this evidence, then there would have to be an opportunity for us to conduct discovery about the sale and present evidence as to whether it was arm's length or not, and whether it was recent in light of the fact that it was occurred 30-some months after the tax lien date and it occurred after the close of the hearing. But I think on the state of the record and what the property owner requested the BTA to do, they acted perfectly properly. There's no evidence of a sale before us. Therefore, we're going to rely on the appraisal evidence that the property owner presented to us.
I guess the only thing that might be said would be, to the extent that the property owner attaches it to their brief and submits it to the BTA, aren't they at least implicitly asking the BTA to consider it as evidence and to open the hearing to the extent of taking this as evidence? I mean, doesn't that constitute and isn't it a proper approach then really for the BTA to consider it and give your client the opportunity to contest it?
I think not, Your Honor, because I think at a minimum, if someone wants to present evidence after a hearing, you know, it's pretty basic that you ask the tribunal to consider the evidence. You just don't attach some written document to a brief. And in fact, the documents attached to the brief were not certified. So we had no basis of knowing whether they were filed, if they were authentic documents, if they were revised. So I think at a minimum, you know, in an ordered system of justice, the parties ought to at least ask the tribunal so that all the parties know. We want you to consider this as evidence. That lets us know what they're trying to do and gives us the opportunity to say, all right, if you want to consider this, we want to submit additional evidence also. We never had that opportunity. So I think at that point, you know, the property owner has some responsibility to address what they're asking. It's not the Board of Tax Appeals' responsibility to say, listen, property owner, you really ought to do it this way. You've done it this way, but we want you to do it this way because this way's wrong. I don't think the BTA has that responsibility. I don't think any tribunal does. Okay. In regards to the appraisal evidence presented, the property owner presented two appraisal reports. If there was any confusion, it was their fault. They presented a March 19th appraisal report, which on the report said the property was valued at $450,000. or March 19th said 588,000. The March 21st report that they submitted said the property was worth 450,000. Both reports were signed by their appraiser, Mr. Lewis. This was the confusion they created. Okay. When that was brought up at the hearing, there was an effort to clarify that. And Mr. Lewis did clarify the situation. He explained, my winning argument is under the podium. He explained that, yes, there was a review of the reports, and he made revisions to the report. And when he was asked what his value was, he said that Mr. Calveri misstated the value at 450. The correct value as of January 1, 2012, is 588,000. That's what he testified to. He took the two reports. He said there's two values here. The correct value is 588,000. Okay. He said that on at least two occasions in his testimony. One of those occasions is under the podium. The other one is he stated at page 13 of the transcript, we're actually at 588,000. That was our final value conclusion on this. So I don't think there's any dispute that the appraiser that was presented said the property value was 588,000, and the BTA correctly corrected its initial decision to reflect that value. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Conzer. Mr. Lewis, you've reserved 7 minutes and 53 seconds. And let me just ask along the lines of what I was asking counsel before. The BTA would have discretion as to how to deal with this situation, wouldn't it, as to whether to reopen the hearing and consider this evidence or whether to disregard it? And why would this be an abuse of that discretion?
Well, I don't think it would, Your Honor, for a couple of reasons. One, the evidence was provided as soon as it was available. And counsel's right. We first submitted uncertified copies because we didn't know how long it would take for the county to issue certified copies. We got the certified copies. We issued those to the Board of Tax Appeals. But there were a number of things then that happened. This is not just summary attachments to a brief. These are the types of items when you have certified copies that are routinely accepted as the evidence of a sale transaction. And there's plenty of case law. And in fact, the argument that counsel made for the school board as their closing argument at the hearing was, we don't have a certified deed, we don't have a certified conveyance fee statement. Well, we do now because the sale commenced, the closing occurred. But the other thing, Your Honor, is that as part of the submission, we asked the court to take judicial notice of those items. Again, this is the type of official document that is self-authenticating, and it's certainly available for the BTA to take judicial notice of it. Additionally, the BTA has an obligation under 57-1701 to do an investigation. They didn't have to do much investigation. We gave them the certified documents, and moreover, this court has routinely said that there should not be a hyper-technical effort to decide cases outside of the merits. And here, what the school board is arguing is that while the sale occurred, we should ignore that because of these hyper-technical issues. But the fact of the matter is that this was provided to the BTA as quickly as possible in a manner that is very consistent with how it's done with boards of revision and with the Board of Tax Appeals.
Well, it's not necessarily hyper-technical that the evidence was not made available at the hearing so that the other side has the opportunity to contest its value.
Well, and I would concede that, Your Honor, and the only reason that it wasn't is because it hadn't yet closed, but this is what was contemplated. This is the natural result of the agreement of the purchase agreement. The appellant's representative was there to testify about that. The school board had ample opportunity, asked a lot of questions about the sale, and so this is not something out of the blue. This is a transaction that was contemplated, that was completed at a time before the BTA issued its decision. And counsel for the school board tells us what he believes the BTA was thinking. I submit to this court that it's not entirely clear, based upon the decisions that were written from the BTA, what it was thinking. The BTA provides little discussion on any of this, and in fact, as I pointed out, says repeatedly that there was no sale and that there is no dispute that there was no sale, and that's just factually not true. So how the BTA reached its decision is certainly unclear from the orders that it issued. In regard, Your Honor, to the appraisal value, the appraiser talked about how he was constrained, that there are certain types of transactions that he can't consider. And based upon sales that, whether they're not foreclosures, they're not deeds in lieu of, those types of things, looking at certain sales, that's the number that he came up with. Yes, the appraiser did say what counsel says that he said, but when you look at the entirety of the testimony, you go on through the balance of the testimony, he then makes clear that he made a mistake, that he was looking at the wrong report. He says twice, my staff printed the wrong report for me in preparation for today's testimony. The attorney examiner went through and very methodically went through the process of saying, which report is your final report, the one later in time, which one received your review, the one later in time. That was the value that he was submitting. That was the value that the property owner was submitting as an appraisal value. And you know, based upon all that, Your Honor, we do believe that the BTA acted unreasonably and unlawfully outside of its legal authority, and we ask again that this court reverse that decision.
Thank you, Your Honor. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision. I had been thinking of taking a recess, but if we're all ready to go, we could just go ahead. Is counsel ready to...
Mr. Hubbard, why don't you go to the restroom?
All right, why don't we take, let's go ahead and take a 10-minute recess.
All rise.